very general language, what the proposed system is, it can be set up too quickly and too easy, and then the liability of the state can be too great if it's not done correctly.
Okay, Phillips.
Thank you.
Felipe's good.
Again, I think the original bill was addressed after the Model Act, the model language, and the Senate committee did a good job with it. When we amended it, Representative Dahman, we used some language in the trigger to a JUA as the key. And
where, can you just guide me to that language in the bill?
Well, if you read through the series of sections in the market system JUAs and how it all works together, and the language, and I'd have to look for it, but talking about when insurance is not reasonably available and that process, and just the fact of the matter is we went into uncharted ground mostly on faith, and I don't believe that would be good policy, and especially when you look at the fact that if we're really trying to make insurance affordable and available, and you encumber the state to a huge financial obligation potentially, I think we should be very cautious.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Phillips and Bellamy, I assume you're both familiar with sections 83 and 84, which state specifically what the liabilities might be. Representative Bellamy.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are some other things that need to be pointed out. The original bill envisioned setting up first a mutual assistance program in which the insurance companies would be asked to come together and set up an ability for anyone who is having trouble finding insurance to contact the mutual assistance program and attempt to have the insurance placed. In the event that did not work effectively, the commissioner then had the authority to determine, but was not mandated to under the original bill, had the authority to look and see whether there was not the ability to find insurance and it was in industry that was needed in Oregon and providing a substantial service, and then to go into a joint underwriting association program. That kind of a mechanism that said we'll be cautious and put the mutual assistance program into place first, and if it doesn't work, go into this very complicated pooling of resources with the great risks involved only as a backup, I think was a well laid out plan. We've had testimony that one of these joint underwriting associations on the East Coast for medical malpractice is at a minus $600 million figure now. And another problem you end up with in these situations is that you really, if it goes bankrupt, you really don't have a good mechanism for dealing with it. Also, the newer version takes out the temporary nature of the Joint Underwriting Association by removing the word temporary. The current version that is before the committee now would have us moving forward with a mutual assistance program at the same time we're racing forward with a Joint Underwriting Association, and in my opinion duplicating a very, very dangerous process. Of all of the provisions we dealt with in the insurance section, I feel most strongly that we made the mistake in this area, and that if we pass this, it'll come back to haunt us.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Bauman,
I'm impressed by how devastating at least the language that's being used to describe this section is, and I wonder if there is a proponent of the current language who can speak for what's in the current language, because I'd like to hear that position.
Mr. Chair, in looking at it, I think it's been accurately described that it would, the language as the sub adopted it, would give the option to trigger into a joint underwriting association at an earlier time. Representative Springer also pointed out that there are exemptions from liability, I believe, in sections 83 and 84. The Joint Underwriting Association would constitute the possibility of availability and affordability of insurance, and therefore it appears to me to be a return to a less available joint underwriting association under the original printed bill, is then less of a threat to the private insurers that are already writing in this state. So I'm obviously putting my bias in, but I think this mechanism ought to be available as early as possible.
I'd like to make a statement. Mr. Chair, yeah, I heard before before the session started, one of the arguments that I heard on why the state should do what it is that this committee is attempting to do now by reforming the laws that have to do with tort and insurance regulation was that unless we did it in a way that was satisfactory to the insurance carriers in this state, they would move out. And I don't think I've ever felt more put upon by an argument or more offended on behalf of my constituency than I did hearing that. And I haven't heard it for a long time. But I think that if it ever came to the point where the state, after making policies made by the lawmakers of the state, were to get an attempted veto by people who have no elected authority to make law or policy for the state, I would like for the state to have something in place so that it could take care of its own constituents and do what it was that the state wanted to do and not what it was that somebody from New York or wherever wanted the state to do. In that sense, I tend in favor of the more accessible JUA potential for the state. Representative Bellamy, maybe you'd like to answer that position.
Well, my
don't,
only
don't feel compelled to.
No, Ryan. My only response is that I. In this particular situation, I don't feel comfortable at all making it easy to form a JUA. When you do, you ought to know what you're doing, and you ought to have it very clear, and it ought to be very conservative, because once you make a mistake, you can't just say, oops, I made a mistake. You've got a lot of people out there that have put their faith in the company to provide insurance in case they have losses. And if it was just the company, it'd be different. But the company represents people. And you just don't, if the mistakes are made, you just don't walk back away and say, oh, I'm sorry. We shouldn't have gone into it as quick. So that's where I'm uncomfortable about making it a little easier.
Representative Burton, then Representative Hanlon.
Yeah, I would like somebody in the subcommittee to perhaps respond to this. If I understand what we're doing with the current, the way that the language is currently written, we are saying that after certain findings, we would then require insurers to join in an association, the JUA. We'd require them to do that. And then in sections 83 and 84, which I think are good points, because we are saying the state has no risk. And I think that probably has been there because there has been a number of situations where states, as was mentioned earlier, are holding large liabilities as a result of failed JUAs. The number that was used reminds me of the same number we're having to deal with right now concerning the Veterans Home Loan Program. We're saying you must do this, and then we're saying, but we're going to hold ourselves harmless from when we force you to do it if it fails. And was that the intent of sections 83 and 84?
Representative Hanlon, do you want to respond? Or
I think the intent of 83 and 84 was, number one, to deal with the liability of the state for any deficits, and to say there is none, and number two, to establish a mechanism that was not, if I recall, subject to the assessment process should a company go under, but to require those insurers who are writing in this state to join and making profits in other lines in this state to join a JUA where there was not availability. In other words, it was basically to have those insurers come in under a mechanism within the insurance office to make insurance in a certain area available.
Well, I understand the purpose of a JUA. My question is, if it fails, who picks up the deficits and the loss for the consumer that's sitting out there hung out on this thing? We've said the state isn't going to do it. We required these insurance companies to do it. Who picks it up if there's a deficit? And we've got a case in hand right now where this has been done on the East Coast, and the state's the one that's assumed the liability. Here we've said the state has said we're not going to do it. Who's going to pick up the deficit?
Representative Burton, you may wish to review the provisions of Section 82 and just before that, I believe 81, which speak to, specifically in 82, what happens if there's an underwriting deficit or if that's determined to exist for any policy year. And perhaps if you...
It's policyholders then. 33% surcharge against policyholders. Is that it?
That's a portion of it.
And the insurers involved, the balance of it.
Yeah. We also, though, we're holding the insurers hold harmless in 82. Section 82 holds them harmless in any action they take. I guess I'm confused by that.
Where are you talking about?
Well, Section 82 lays out how you recover the any deficits, and it goes back, it's laid back on the policyholders. Primarily, 33% of the surcharge levied against the policyholders participating, and so on. The insurer, self-insured, agent or employees under Section 83 is there's no liability or cause of action for any action taken by or statement made by in performance of their authority under this. So you're holding the board harmless, but you're sticking it to the policyholders. It would appear either. Seems to me that's the way it's written.
Mr. Chair.
Captain Phillips.
And if the policyholders don't pay the surcharge, you cancel their insurance.
Within 10 working days.
That sounds like an effective way to address it. So everybody's off.
Well, I guess you could compare it to the effectiveness of the private market in meeting the needs of Oregonians over the past couple of years.
I guess we could.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
Just to express one other concern with the bill. It mandates that if the commissioner finds certain things, he or she must institute a joint underwriting association. And if at the point of institution of this joint underwriting association, 100% of joint underwriting associations in other states had failed, he'd still have to, the way the bill is written, institute a joint underwriting association.
Further discussion.
Mr. Chair, I just think that the commissioner may, by rule, require insurers under Section 5, line 75, line 7 and 8.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's for a mutual assistance program for a joint underwriting association. On line 16 of page 30, it says the insurance commissioner shall mandate the formation.
Right. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamlin.
Yes. And there are some A and B are met, and those are obviously things that are within a range of great discretion.
Okay. I sense our discussion is drawing to a close. However, I want to make sure that if there were questions that weren't resolved, those are resolved. Representative Dix.
I'm sorry. I was going to call for the question.
Okay. Is there further discussion on Representative Bellamy's motion to replace the provisions of -108 amendments relating to JUA with the original provisions of Senate Bill 323 C and Groves? That correctly state your intent, Representative Bellamy? If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Bellamy's motion.
No. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Clarify for me again what the motion is. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bellamy's motion is to replace the provisions of Dash 108, which relate to JUA, with the original provisions of Senate Bill 323C in gross that relate to the JUA. Hope I've stated that correctly. Any further question? If not, the clerk will proceed, resume the roll count. Representative Bauman have been recorded as a no vote.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
No.
Hamlin?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
No. Motion's adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bellamy.
Can we have somebody from the subcommittee kind of tell us, or the staff tell us, what Section 89 through 93 does? It has to do with the PLF.
Council, do you want to respond to Representative Bellamy's question?
Yes, yeah, Section 89, what it does is create the responsibility. It says the insurance commissioner shall adopt rules for establishment of professional liability funds for professional boards that are licensed under the state, and then it defines who belongs to those funds in the next section, and then it talks about in Section 91 specifically who would be affected, and it talks about in Oregon those in private practice, and specifies those not exempted from the governing boards, and then down in Section 92 it gives the authority of each board described previously, your medical, accountants, etc., the authority. It says they may require all qualified members of the profession to carry professional liability insurance. It's modeled on the professional liability fund of the bar, which...
Last question on that last point.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that... Representative Bellamy, are you... got the... Well, information you need.
The question I have is that it seems like it's missing something to me when you read it. Section 90 says is that the Section 89 says shall adopt rules for the establishment of the fund described in Section 90. And in Section 90 it talks about license certification. It really, to me, doesn't say establishment of a fund described in Section 90. In Section 90, I don't really see where there's a fund described and any limits put on what this fund will do. And then when I read 91, 92, and 93, it's describing more of the functions of a board and this sort of thing. And it almost appears to me that this language, there's a hole. It appears to me that it's saying you're going to set one up, and it says as in section such, but nowhere does it describe any limits or whatever on this liability fund.
Council, do you want to try to respond?
Yeah, you had two questions and one.
And I guess my third question would be is who authorizes... Where in these sections does it give any one person to authorize and say, okay, you've done all your homework, you've got your ducks in order, and we're going to allow you to do it? Is that the insurance commissioner?
It says that... Well, the insurance commissioner has the rulemaking authority, and he develops the rules first, and then I think my understanding is the professional boards themselves decide whether they want to have a fund. And then as the second choice, they can decide whether everyone has to belong to the fund or not.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I don't have any problems with what they're trying to do. It appears to me that you refer to as described in Section 90 of the Act. When you read Section 90, they don't describe a fund. They just simply limit the licensees. Now I have a question. Okay, it says the insurance company shall adopt rules. Such rules shall include, but not limited to, and really the only thing they specify is annual reports. Well, I would feel very uncomfortable. I agree, the insurance commissioner could shut up some rules, but I think the insurance commissioner ought to have the authority as to whether they actually form it or not. Because every professional organization wants an insurance company or insurance provisions. And they can all just set up their rules and decide to do it. And it may be that they really haven't fought it through long enough. And somebody, to me, ought to have the authority to say, wait a minute, folks, you really haven't studied it as much as you should. Now, maybe the insurance commissioner could have that in his rules. It just seems to me like we've got a good idea here, but the language isn't complete.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bond.
I have a question for counsel on page 38, lines 24 and 25, when it says, once you've set up this organization, each board described in Section 90 of this Act may require all qualified members of the profession to carry professional liability insurance. My question is, assuming the board sets up an insurance company, does this mean that they require them to buy insurance from that board set up company and close out all other insurance companies?
I think on the next page, page 39, lines 12 to 14, it says the board shall have the authority to assess each qualified member for a contribution to the fund.
What is the reason, the policy reason, for excluding the opportunity to buy insurance from private companies?
This is the language that came from the Senate. I don't know if Mark Council is particularly qualified to speak to what the Senate did.
I hope that's your question.
I don't know if she can respond.
I withdraw the question because I don't want to make an unfair question. Mr. Chairman, I would then express this concern about this section. I don't believe I raised this in subcommittee because I didn't have an opportunity to read the section. I have a concern when they provide authority to set up these board-operated insurance companies without any proof of their necessity. We then allow them to write insurance, and we then allow them to exclude private companies from writing the insurance and close the private companies out of writing the business. I have a real concern with that kind of provision.
Is that something you expect the Board of Medical Examiners to do, or...?
I don't know whether accountants, Board of Medical Examiners, or any other group would do it, but what I'm saying is that we have a number of groups, private groups, writing insurance in the state of Oregon now successfully with many of those people licensed under boards, and why would we want to set up a mechanism whereby without proof of need, you can set up another insurance company that closes them out? There's been a lot of complaint here that by some members that OMA has a special arrangement with another group. Now, why would we want to go further and give the very board that licenses the opportunity to completely close out competition? I don't understand the policy basis for that.
Well, OMA, of course, doesn't license anybody. That's the Board of Medical Examiners.
Well, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I'm really not trying to defeat this section. It's just that when I read it and when concerns were brought to me, it didn't seem complete. I will tell you that I would definitely want language, if I proved this, language that would say that the insurance commissioner would take steps to make sure that this issue had been fully discussed in the organization, and that I would even go so far as to say, and that two-thirds of the organization approved of it. Because you can get these ideas that are really good, and the board of directors thinks they're really good, and the members really don't understand until it's been done. And before I just would like an organization, I'd want the insurance commissioner to make sure that the organization is ready for it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Mr. Miller, would you let anybody start an insurance fund without them being ready to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burton, we would not permit someone to organize as an insurer unless they met the very stringent requirements of the code. That's correct.
Now, would that go to a PLF?
the legislature's charge to the commissioner is that he must establish rules. Of course, we'll establish rules, and we'll use our best judgment in establishing those rules. The problem, I guess, is balancing between a desire to accomplish what is intended in the legislature by allowing these to form, and yet make sure that the rules are sufficient to ensure that they have some integrity, that they have some chance to succeed.
Representative Bond.
Bob, when you say that you would ensure that these groups would meet the rules and the adequate protections of, as I understand it, of the insurance code, when the PLF for attorneys was set up, did it meet the reserving requirements or the surplus requirements and all of those things?
Representative Bunn, I may have misspoke myself. What I said was, first I said we have stringent requirements for insurers under the insurance code, and we make them comply. But if the legislative directive was for us to establish some sort of different set of rules for these kinds of organizations, we would do our best to comply with that. I didn't mean to imply that what we were going to do would necessarily be require these organizations to meet all of the requirements of the insurance code. Because I think that the legislation itself later on specifically says that they are exempt from the insurance code. I guess the rules would go to the formation and the organization.
Okay. Representative Bellamy, did you have some specific language that you wanted to amend or a specific motion? Representative
Bond. Kevin, I have a suggestion. I would move on line 12 of page 37. That the word shall be removed and the word may be inserted so that the insurance commissioner may adopt rules for the establishment. And the reason for the amendment is that I don't believe the commissioner would adopt those rules unless he had made a decision that it could be done on a sound basis.
Representative Bellamy, does that come close to what you had in mind?
Mr. Chair, would help because my initial response was to take out these sections, but I think it's a good idea, and I'm uncomfortable about taking them out. I just am concerned about the writing, and maybe that would take care of it.
Okay, Representative Bunn has moved on line 12 of page 37 of the -108 amendments that shall be amended to read may. Is there further discussion? Let's make sure we got everybody here. Could we ask any absent members to join us?
Did I get called?
Is Dana?
Not yet. Yeah. Anybody else out there? Fix it. The motion is on line 12, page 37, to delete shall and insert the word may. Clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
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 Aye.
Aye.
No. Motion fails.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
Representative Bellamy has completed his discussion. I'd like to discuss something that has recently come to my attention, and I'd like to have people look at Section 80. We amended that back to the original of the bill. Everybody talks about being formed, and that originally was addressed, I think, in Section 80 of the main bill, too, is the one passed.